man, I'm glad you're here. Well, I'm Kirk, and I'm the lead pastor at Crossbridge, and you ought to get something extra for coming on rainy days. I'm pretty sure you do, but I think you get it in heaven, okay? So, but we're glad that you're here, and I'm pumped about that. We're starting a series on parenting called The Art of Parenting. And every time I start a new series or I'm working on a sermon, I'll kind of go over to YouTube and just see, man, is there any kind of poignant video, any meaningful way, you know, that paints a picture that would just really strike a chord in your heart? And I found one, and so I want us to watch this quick video.
I'm excited. Me and my wife just had a new baby. Yeah, well, that's how they come. It's new. My wife wanted to go to the prenatal classes, right? And I'm like, why I gotta go to class? You pregnant, I pass. You know what I'm saying? Like a teacher class or something. I don't know what you want me to do, but I went to the class because I love my wife, right? And I'm afraid that they're gonna play the video. I don't wanna watch the video. I'm looking for Bible verses against the video. And then the doctor tries to throw in perks. The doctor was like, so listen, during birth, would you like to catch the baby? Catch the baby doing what? What are you talking about? I said, no. If you want to, you can catch the baby. I'm like, isn't that your job to catch the baby? Do I get a discount if I catch the baby? What are you gonna be doing while I'm catching the baby? You went to school to catch the baby. I do comedy. I shouldn't be catching the baby.
I love that. Well, in our series, I want to encourage you this. I would love everybody to get this book, The Art of Parenting. Dennis and Barbara Rainey have six kids, but they've been in marriage and family ministry for decades. And I'll just tell you, in this day and age, you know, I was in the publishing business back in the 90s and early 2000s before I became a pastor. And these guys have been consistent for 35 years. God's got his hand on them. And so I want to encourage you, get this book. It's full of practical things. They are humble because if anybody raises six kids, has got to be humble, right? Anybody raises seven kids, has got to be, well, we'll talk about that later. But I want you to get a copy of this book. And in fact, I'm going to give this book out to someone free, whoever's the first one to get up here. Oh, there we go, coach. There we go. Come on, mama. You got to move a little quicker. And don't worry about that woman you beat out, James. Way to go. That's good. It was no men's women's division. It was one division. So in your seat, there should be a card that looks like that book. It's The Art of Parenting. It has our logo on it. What it describes on the card are the things that we're doing in this series just to help you. And this is not just like a 3-week deal or a fall thing. This is the place to raise your kids. I'm telling you, because we are going to walk with you together. And I don't care whether you're a single parent or you got a spouse at home, whether where you come from, whatever. We are here to help, and we're just going to do it together. On that card, it speaks about tonight is a family movie night. So the parents are going to watch a movie called Like Arrows. It's going to be powerful and encouraging. It's going to be really good. Plus, we're going to have really good popcorn that we make fresh. And then the kids are going to watch an animated movie, Rio, upstairs, one that's on their own level. But we want parents, we're going to be together. So come tonight, 5 p.m., okay? It's free. And then September 18th, we start a class called The Art of Parenting, where we actually walk through this book together. It's 6 weeks long. We have some spots left. And this, here's what I want to say. When you know, I haven't been a pastor my whole life. I was a child once. And I haven't been a pastor my whole adult life. And sometimes I would sit on your side of the Sunday deal, and I would hear something. I'd think, well, that's a good idea. I need to do that. And then I'd go home, and then I'd get caught up in the whirlwind of life. If you want to succeed in parenting, if you want to improve, if you want to go from where you are to where you want to be and where God wants you to be, then you have to approach life with intention. And so this class, The Art of Parenting, is a great thing. I'm telling you, parents, come to this thing. Do not let the whirlwind of life keep you from coming to it. If you're a soon-to-be parent or you hope to be a parent, get a head start. If you've got grandkids in whose life you're involved, Come to this thing, okay? We have spots left. The information is on the card. And I want you to be a part of that, okay? And then those books I mentioned, they're, you can purchase them at the Connection Center. We got a big display of them. You can go to Amazon and get it as well, whatever works for you, okay? Well, let me bring you up to speed. Last week, if you remember, I told you that there were three big questions that everybody on the planet, from every culture, three big questions that everybody asks. Those questions are, who am I? They ask the question, who are my friends? Who's my tribe? And they ask, what's my purpose? Those three questions are questions of our identity, our sense of belonging, and our sense of purpose. And they drive us either consciously or subconsciously. We cannot not answer those questions. We have to do that. And so last week I told you, I put that picture up of all the boxes on the screen. Good, I'm so glad I'm not wearing the same shirt as last week. So we put boxes on the stage, and I asked you to call out. I said, if you take Jesus out of the equation, what are the ways, what are the things in the world that people use to answer the who am I question? What are the things in the world that people often use to feel like they belong or to feel loved and or to feel like they have a purpose and are significant? And so you all called out all kinds of things to me, and then my assistants wrote them on these boxes. They were things like jobs. We often identify ourselves by our jobs. We think of ourselves as that. We sometimes we use money as a purpose. As my purpose is to make as much money as I can. We use stuff, possessions. Sometimes we use the praise or the responses of people to us to help define whether we belong or whether we are feel loved or if we matter or not. Sometimes we use sex as a way to belong, and we misuse that. We use all kinds of things to answer that question, who am I? The problem is, they're just cardboard boxes. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with any of those things at all, except because they're cardboard, they're not made to carry the weight of your sense of identity. It can't carry, they're not enough to fulfill the purpose for your life. They're not enough to make you feel like you belong because we don't control these things. Your 401k can, you know, 2008, when the economy tanked, your 401k became a 201k pretty much. You know, you don't control things like that. You can work faithfully in a job and still be laid off. You can be faithful in a relationship, but the person with whom you're in that relationship may decide to not be faithful. And if your identity and your purpose and your sense of belonging is resting on these cardboard boxes, then when they get crushed, you get crushed too. And Jesus has an alternative. He says, these are things that you can use, but I've got an alternative. And the alternative, he says in John 15:5, is I'm the vine and you're the branches. If you remain in me and I remain in you, you're going to bear much fruit. But apart from me, you can do nothing. What he's saying is, fine, come be in relationship with me, a singular, exclusive relationship where I establish your identity. I give you a place to belong. I give you and involve you in my purposes in the world. And when you do that, he says, you're going to bear much fruit. And you know, whenever Jesus or in the Bible, sometimes you see the word fruit related to our lives, it means this. It means nine different specific things, at least these nine. Love is one of those. So when Jesus says, find your identity and your belonging and your purpose in me, remain in me and you'll bear much fruit, you will feel love. I'm not talking, you'll just know, oh yeah, yeah, God loves me. No, I'm talking about feeling, experiencing love. He says, when you find your identity and belonging and purpose in me, when you remain in me, you will experience joy. Sometimes that joy is going to be full, and other times it's going to be a river that just sustains you as you float through challenging seasons. But you're going to bear the fruit of love, and you're going to bear the fruit of joy. And when you do, you're also going to bear the fruit of peace. Anybody wish that you had peace on the inside? And when you feel those three things, you're going to bear the fruit of kindness and gentleness and patience. Because when you feel love and joy and peace, it emanates and it bears the fruit of that changes our interaction. It helps us become more faithful. It helps us be more self-controlled. And Jesus longs for us to experience this. And he says, find it in me. And then he says in John 15:10, he says, obey my commands and you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commandments and I remain in his love. It's not a conditional thing. He's not saying, if you obey me, then I'll love you. But if you don't obey me, then forget it. It's not like that. What it is, it's like that God has, as if it weren't obvious, a giant watering can. Okay? He's pouring it out right now. You can hear it. He has another giant watering can besides that one. And it is a watering can of blessing. And he has a plan for your life. And he wants to water you as you walk in his plan. But it's his plan. It's not our plan. He has the best plan. And so when he says, obey my commands and remain in my love, what he means is when he's watering, if he wants you to go over here, if his plan for your life is over here, he's going to water over here. And as you obey his commands will help bring you under that shower, that water can of blessing. And if he wants you to go over here, then his commands and your obedience to them help you remain in his love. It's not that he doesn't love you if you don't. It's just you're not going to experience the fullness of his love because his love wants to manifest in a life-changing way in you. He doesn't want you just to come to church on Sunday and follow a bunch of rituals or traditions. He wants your life to be different. He wants your marriage, your friendships, your romances. He wants your parenting. He wants your job, every role that you play. He wants it to be different because of this relationship with him. So he says, follow me, obey my commands, come under my blessing, stay in there, obey me, follow my instructions, and you will remain in my love and you will bear much fruit. But we can't experience that if we're resting our identity and our belonging, our purpose on top of the cardboard boxes of the, you know, what life offers us. But what about our kids? Okay? What about our kids? You know, in reality, they have the same exact three questions burning inside of them. They do. They may not be able to articulate it, but you see it in them, this desire to belong. You address it even. You know, when Debbie and I were, I say when we were pregnant, kind of like Michael Jr., you know, when we were pregnant, boy, that was a tough 9 months. I had to do everything myself. When we were pregnant and we were about to have Ellie, our oldest daughter, I was like, I'd see these other people with babies, you know, that were still our age, but, you know, I mean, parents our age that had just had kids. And I was like, I will not be one of those baby talk dads. You know, that googly talk you do with kids when you look at them. You know, I was like, oh, you know, that over animated. Am I getting some nods? You know what I'm talking about, right? Over animated, that high pitched voice that if you did it to anybody else, would be like really freaky. Like, hey, Charles. You know, that would be that just, I'm sorry, that felt weird just for illustration purposes. But as soon as Ellie was born, and in those early months, I caught myself going, Ellie, where's daddy? Where's daddy? Okay, I'm not going to look at y'all. That's too weird. Where's daddy? Who's Ellie? Who's Ellie? You're Ellie. What was I doing? I was speaking identity to my child. I was telling her who she was based first on who I am. I'm daddy. I'm protector. I'm provider. I love you more than anybody except for that woman. And your mama. And you are mine. I was defining her identity in relationship to me. That's what Jesus does. And our kids need that. That sense of belonging. Don't you know, you see it especially in middle school. You know, that was the hardest, you know, years of my life was middle school. I mean, I'm barely over it now, but I think I'm pretty good. But that need to belong, oh my gosh, I just felt like a social outcast. I just... And then as I grew, you know, so our kids deal, I'm just reliving that, having to break through it for a second there. But, you know, our kids wrestle with these same three questions. The difference, though, for them is that the world throws some of the same, but also some different things at them that it doesn't throw at us. And here's what I want to do. I want to do a little more audience participation. So I've asked Kim to come help me, and Chris to come help me. And they are going to write down on these boxes, and if you can write on two sides, great, if there's time, what are some things in the world that our kids are drawn to answer the question, who am I? What are some things that the world says, this is who you ought to be, or this is how you, this should be your purpose, or this is how you belong, or this is who you are? What are some things in the world? Throw them out. Okay, I'm sorry. One over here, someone over here. What'd you say?
Video games.
Okay. Sports. Okay, you got writing different things down, aren't you? Look at you. Academics, that's right. Popularity. Social media. Oh, now, sister, you're getting close to home. Is that what you were going to say? What else? Music, okay. Boyfriend, girlfriend. There we go. What else? Anything else? Let me see. Body image, yeah. We said sports. How about grades? We got academics. I'm going to throw that to there. Parents? Appearance, yes. Appearance, yeah, that's when I had a good one. Yeah, how many more boxes we got? You've got room for one more, too. TV, friends, ooh, that's good, yeah. Okay, so let me spread these out a little bit so you all can see them. Let's see, there we go. We'll do our best to make a little U-shaped mountain here. And you got popularity. Okay, sports, TV, come on. I'll take that there. I'll put those together. Talk amongst yourselves. All right. Social media. There we go. All right. We got another TV. That's good. All right. None of these by itself is wrong that I can think of. I mean, I'll just say on the boyfriend-girlfriend thing, Debbie and I really encouraged our kids. Man, girls, let's just push it past. Let's wait till we get to be 16. And let's push it further out. And the girls did push it further out. It's hard to control. It's impossible, really, to control your child's heart. You can get compliance out of a child. You can make them obey something, but you can't capture their heart that way, right? Don't confuse compliance with internalization of your values, all right? Sometimes you got to go for compliance. But anyway, so we really tried to push this out just to guard their hearts. They did, and their hearts were guarded. Let me see, is there anything else? Nothing wrong by itself with sports, nothing wrong with TV, nothing wrong with friends, social media, what was that one? Appearance, nothing wrong with wanting to have a good appearance or be beautiful or handsome. Nothing wrong with wanting to even be famous, you know, which seems to be the bulk of social media, to be known, to be recognized, to be liked. All those things are good. The problem comes when our children, like us, with their boxes, try to rest their identity and their belonging and their purpose on them, because they don't. They give way. And when they give way, we come crashing down with them. Kids are facing the same three questions we are, just they've got different boxes with which to contend. But Jesus' answer to them is precisely the same that it is to us. He says, no, I couldn't pull the cross out today because of the keyboard. Find your identity in me, kids. Oh, sweet child, sweet daughter, sweet son. You belong to the people of God. Be a part of the people of God. Because you see, the people of God are people that are finding their identity in Jesus. They're a whole lot safer than hanging out with, you know, entrusting yourself to people who are finding their identity in these things, right? Because If someone doesn't have their identity in Jesus, they're trying to find some place to hang it. And maybe you meet their need for a while, but then eventually you will not be able to meet it, and so they'll push you aside. They'll hurt your heart. So Jesus says to them what he says to us. Oh, no, no. Find it in me. I've got a purpose for you way bigger than, you know, extending a string of Instagram messages, you know, a thread for, or Snapchat thread for days, or getting more thumbs up, or getting more people to follow you, or like you. That's really not liking you. They, you know, I've got something better for you than that. But here's the question. How's a child supposed to get that? I mean, think about it. It's daunting, isn't it? I mean, and some of you guys are single parents. I mean, double daunting. How's a child supposed to, in this ever-darkening culture, to resist and not put their identity in these things? How are they supposed to find it in Jesus? One of the most important chapters or passages in the whole Bible deals specifically with this. It's Deuteronomy 6, verses 5 through 7. And God has given a word to Moses, who's delivering it to all of Israel. And he says to Israel, he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul and your strength. Did I get that right? And these commandments, this one and others that are derivatives of it, these commandments are to be on your hearts. Then he says, impress them on your children. He says, teach them or talk with them as you sit at home and as you walk along the road and as you lie down and when you get up. He's talking to all of Israel, and it's really important to understand, just seeing who's, didn't know somebody's over there, hey Mike. It's really important to understand that God is saying the passing on of the joy of the Lord and this truth about Jesus is a collective effort. It is all of our responsibilities. I was talking with a dad this week who was going through a challenge with a teenage, a son or daughter, I won't say which, a son or daughter, and wanted to say, hey, would you meet with them? And I said, well, I'd be happy to, but I also knew some younger guys than me and women who were in their late 20s, much closer to this teenager's life. I said, I want to talk to them, but I really think they ought to talk to these couples that I know that they love him and he respects them. Oops, it's a he, okay? And so it's a collective effort. All of us, whether you have kids or not, whether you're an empty nester or never had kids, or you're a single person, or you're a couple but not yet have kids, it's a collective effort. You play a role. I can't tell you how important it was to Debbie and me to have some people be their life group leaders and pour into them and say the same things to them that they were hearing from us. It just meant so much. So we're all in this. But it's really clear at the end of verse 7 that there's a role that is distinctive. Because who is it that talks with your child at home when you sit around with him? Who is it that talks with them when we don't walk along the road a lot, but we do hop in the SUV and the minivan and we go places and we decide when we're gonna go and where we're gonna go? Who does that for a child? And who is it that has the opportunity to sit at their bedside when they go to sleep, or sit at their bedside when they wake up, or if they got teenagers? Who is it that has the opportunity to influence how the day ends and how we say good night to our teenagers, or how we wake them up, or how we greet them, or how we create a format for the morning when they're waking up to their own alarm clocks? It's parents. It's parents. The number one influence and number one responsibility for children coming to know who Jesus is and what he has for them and putting their identity and their belonging and their purpose, finding that in him, it rests upon us parents. There's nobody else. It's a collective effort. But let me tell you, if you brought your children every single Sunday to Crossbridge, which is a great decision, okay? It's a good thing to do that. And you all know it, or you wouldn't have braved the rain. But even if you came every single Sunday, which not even I do, that would be 75 hours a week, a year. 75 hours a year. There's another 8,700 hours in a given year. That 75 represents 0.1%, less than that actually. Let's say that you're also involved in a life group, like from 0 to 5th grade, we raised our kids in a life group with us, and it was all cool when they were little bitty and they were all quiet and stuff in the little, what do you call that thing? Carrier, there we go, forget. You're closer to it than me. Then they got to be toddlers and they were running everywhere and life group was crazy. But we raised them in life group till the 5th grade and then they went into their Ablaze life group. That was another 2 hours a week, so that's another 100 hours, but that's just still 0.2% of the available time in any given year. It's important time. It's part of how we collectively impart the good news of Jesus to our children. But without a doubt, the number one role, responsibility in the hierarchy of responsibility, it rests upon parents. I'm one of you, but let me just say, you're responsible. It's you, okay? And I know when I say that, we got people that are just now having their first child and they're all about, we're going to be the best parents and I want you to be that. I know some of you, though, may be going through a challenging season with a child right now. Maybe they're already grown and you're like, oh, I wish I'd been in a place where I could have known what I know now back then. But it's too late, maybe you're feeling. Maybe you feel like you're ill-equipped. Maybe you feel like your own life is such a mess that you don't know how to go about the parenting process. Maybe you're hung up with how you were raised. Maybe you feel like you've lost all moral authority with your children because of things that you did when you were their age. And you think, how can I tell them not to do this? I did it myself. And you feel like you have no moral authority. Let me tell you what, all those things I just said are a lie. They're a lie. You know what Jesus says? You know what the Bible says in Romans 8 about you parents and about the parenting process and about your past and about this daunting role of raising children in a dark culture who we don't want just good Christian people. We want to guard their heart and for them to blossom with all the fruit and all the plans and potential that Jesus has for them. In this ever-darkening culture, you know what God says? He says, how should we respond? This is the Apostle Paul. He says, how should we respond to all the darkness out there and the promises of Jesus? And he says, we should say, who can stand against us if God is for us? We should say, if God, who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how much more will he not also, in addition to Jesus, give us all these things that we need as parents? And even more than that, he says, Jesus himself who died and who was raised to life is at the right hand of God. I'll explain that another day. At the right hand of God, interceding for us. God is for us. And then he says, therefore, nothing, I am confident, nothing can separate us from the love of God.